Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Hi everyone, it's podcast day. Thanks so much for tuning in to Ladies of Liverpool. It's me, Leanne Campbell. So grateful that you're listening in and you're doing everything you can to help. You're following on socials and getting involved. So thank you very much. We are definitely spreading the word. It's weeks like this that make us realise how important it is to talk. So whether it's listening to these podcasts and passing on any messages you get, whether it sort of opens up your mind on what you should be talking about and who you should be talking to, we're discussing suicide this week. Thousands and thousands of people in the UK end their lives by suicide every single year. Suicide is the leading cause of death, I believe, amongst young people aged between 20 and 35 in our country. And it's considerably higher when it comes to men. So men apparently three times more likely to commit suicide compared to women, which just makes me think we need to be keeping a close eye on the people around us, maybe looking for different signs. It's still, you know, it's not often talked about. It's highly stigmatised, isn't it, about suicide and the reasons behind it and how we can prevent it. So we're going to use Ladies of Liverpool this week to speak to a lady who recently went through this. You're talking like last month. She lost her brother to suicide. She's going to talk us through some of the signs, things we should be looking for, like people around us feeling more depressed, withdrawn, anxious, losing interest in things that they were really interested in, the hobbies, work, socialising. Let's try and put a stop to this or just make a difference. And she's got one important way which she thinks we really can make a change. So hear her story, that fateful day, the help she received, things that maybe she feels that are in place that let her down. Listen, take it in. And if you can help Debbie out, then please do. This is Ladies of Liverpool.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
First of all, then, Debbie, I would like to say thank you for contacting Ladies of Liverpool. I think you've got a very important story to tell. And we're going to start off then just introducing you and your brother. Tell us about your situation and what you've been going through.
Oh, thank you. Well, the reason why I wanted to do this is just to raise awareness. I lost my brother last month to suicide, but I think the most difficult part of it was that, you know, Sean didn't try and hide the fact that he felt suicidal. He reached out to the people he should have been reaching out to, mm-hmm. and told them how he was feeling. As a family member, I'd done the same. Even the night before it happened, he had a mental health team around him. I phoned that mental health team and said to them, you know, I'm seriously worried about my brother. I'd already raised the alarm a couple of weeks prior to that.
Yeah.
But this particular night, I'd just spoken to him and he just didn't seem well at all.
When you say he reaching out, you say he's been reaching out to people. Tell us how this all began. When did you first realise that your brother was struggling and who was he reaching out to?
Yeah, so Sean had, he suffered with mental illness for years. It got particularly bad about 4 years ago to the point where he was in hospital. He met the criteria at that time to be in hospital. Mm-hmm. And when he came out of hospital, he had a nurse, a support worker, and he went in and out of counselling services as much as the budgets would allow. And he managed to maintain himself so that he was able to live a life. You know, he was happy a lot of the time when he was around his nieces and nephews and things like that. But the last year particularly, he got really bad. So Sean heard voices a lot of the time,
right.
And his medication was never quite managed. Mm-hmm. So they were swapping and changing his medication a lot, trying to find something that would work for him. But while they were doing that, Sean's symptoms were getting worse to the point where he just didn't know what was real. He was scared a lot of the time. He didn't even trust me, who was the closest person to him.
Debbie, that must be awful for a sister to not be able to protect a brother.
It was terrifying. Mm. But luckily, I had a really close relationship with his previous nurse. She used to come round to the house in half terms and summer holidays, and she'd catch up with me, let me know what treatment he was on, how he was doing. And that was great because we were able to keep a close eye on him. If Sean said he was fine, she wouldn't just take that as granted. She'd give me a call and say, come on, Deb, how's he really doing? So I was able to update her then and say, well, actually, you know, he was down last week saying he wasn't feeling great and he was having a bit of a wobble. And she was like, that's really interesting because he's just told me he was fine. Right, I'll keep an eye on this now.
Well, what were the triggers? What were the certain things that you knew would lead to low moments?
Well, to be honest, it was counselling and therapy, because Sean had a bit of a traumatic past when he was younger and he could never quite get over it.
Is this what you think is the root of everything?
Yeah, it's definitely the root cause of things, and Sean could never quite get past that. And I think when he was going to counselling and therapy, he was talking about that a lot. So it was right at the front of his mind. So whilst it might work for some people, for Sean, it inevitably made him feel so much worse for that period of time. And he'd actually started therapy just before, you know, he took his own life. He'd been attending for a couple of weeks before that.
He started going back to therapy, so you're obviously on high alert then, because you know this makes him emotional.
Yeah, he's had a lot of changes leading up to it. He changed his nurse because his old nurse had left for a different role. So he had a new nurse, he'd started therapy, and he'd just started taking different medication that they prescribed for him. So there was a lot of change around that time that was... He was all over the place. He didn't know what was going on. His nurse and his psychiatrist also said that, you know, they were concerned. But I was just told so many times he didn't meet the criteria for hospital. And obviously the night before it happened, he'd called me just saying really worrying things. Like, he was so confused. He thought he was going to get arrested when he wasn't. He just heard voices telling him that he was. He didn't know whether he could trust his nurse. He was asking if I knew his nurse was against him, would I say something?
Yeah.
And obviously I'm on the phone going, Sean, of course, I would, mate. I'd literally kill them for you if I had to. But you've got to believe that you're thinking this because you're not well. It's not real. And I was begging him to come to our house and stuff, and he wouldn't. He was like, don't worry, you know, it's nothing, I'm just being silly. So obviously I phoned his nurse straight after that and said, look, I've never seen him this anxious before. I'm really scared that he's going to hurt himself, because he had told me several times he was suicidal, and he told his nurse as well.
Ladies of Liverpool.
So you tell us what happened the day before.
So the day before, he'd called me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's when he asked me if I knew the nurses and the psychiatrist were against him. Would I stick up for him? Would I tell him? Yeah. I was like, mate, of course I would, love. Like, you know, I'd fight for you till the end, but you're not well and this is why it's happening. And he was like, okay, I just needed to hear that it's fine. And then I got another call at about 6 o'clock that evening off him saying, if I get arrested, will you pick me up in the police station tomorrow? I was like, why would you get arrested? Sean was the nicest man in the world. You know, he would never hurt anybody. And he said, I think I can hear my neighbours saying that I've been harassing them and they're going to phone the police. I was like, mate, honestly, it's not happened. You need to, you know, do you want to come down here? And he was like, no, I'm fine.
How powerless do you feel trying to convince somebody?
Oh, helpless.
When they believe that they are so right.
Yeah.
You know, it must be so hard for you to try and, almost like you want to shake them, but...
Yeah, I just felt so scared for him, because he was just terrified of everything. He didn't know who he could trust. He didn't know what was real. His mind was constantly doing overtime to the point where he had no rest. So obviously, as soon as that call had ended, I phoned. It was the out of hours team at the hospital. I had to call the mental health team because it was 6 o'clock. I was asked why I didn't phone earlier, which, you know, I didn't phone earlier because I just got off the phone to him. And then I was told there's not much they can do for him. He doesn't meet the criteria for hospital. And she said, I'll give him a call now. So I gave her a call back about an hour later to see what the conversation was. And she says, he's fine. She said, it says on our records he was seen on the 17th. Which was 2 days earlier, and he was fine. And I was like, you know, he's not fine.
He's your brother, yeah, you know when he's fine.
I've had to call you several times over the last 2 weeks, telling you how concerned I was. His nurse and his psychiatrist told me they were concerned. How could he be fine? And she said, well, we've offered him home treatment, and he's refused it. So I've given him our number and told him to phone us if he needs us.
But you know he's not in the place to distinguish whether he needs someone or he doesn't.
Someone who's suicidal is not going to pick up the phone when they're suicidal and ask for help. They're just not going to do it with the best intentions. He wasn't in control of what was going on. And I just think he was left, the worst thing for me was he was left with so much medication, which he obviously used to take his own life in the end. And if he refused home treatment, which you would do if he was suicidal, they should have took that medication off him and said, right, if you're refusing home treatment, you have to come to us to collect your medication each day.
That makes sense.
You know,
to
even
me,
if
Debbie,
it's just a different angle at it. But I just think the onus shouldn't be put on patients. If someone is in that state where families are phoning concerned, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to make their own decisions about refusing treatment. It should be, you are having home treatment. Yeah. You won't come in, you don't meet the criteria for hospital, that's fine. But this is what we're going to do instead to protect you.
So he took an overdose at home.
Yeah.
And How did you learn about what had happened?
Well, I'd been phoning him up until 11 o'clock that night, just checking on him. I phoned my mum and I said, Mum, please, will you just give Sean a call? I'm really worried about him. I've had to phone his nurse. So luckily, my mum gave him a call about 9 o'clock that night. She was just having a chat with him about, you know, she was meant to meet him the next day.
Yeah.
So she called him. I think I just knew things were taking a turn.
Yeah.
And I just wanted everyone to phone him, make sure he was just, you know, tell him that they loved him. And luckily, my mum did. And then I phoned him when my daughter was in rehearsals for the show. So as soon as I got home, the last thing I did before bed was give him a call. And he didn't sound tired at all. He was just like, yep, yep, yep. Like one word answers.
Like his adrenaline was going.
Yeah.
Think?
But they prescribed him sleeping tablets and diazepam the weekend before to help him through the weekend. And I knew he hadn't took them that weekend because he said he didn't feel like he needed them. So I knew he still had them in the flat. So I said, you know, you don't sound very tired, mate. Have you took one of your sleeping tablets? He went, no. He said, I will do. I was like, okay, get yourself some sleep and, you know, hopefully you'll feel a bit brighter tomorrow. I'll phone you first thing in the morning. So the next morning, my mum was due to meet him and she phoned me and she said, I've tried to phone Sean, can't get through. Will you give him a call? It's like, yeah, I'll do it now. So I phoned him at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. Couldn't get through, and that wasn't like Sean. Usually you phone him, whether he's asleep, he wakes up straight away and answers the phone. Couldn't get through, tried and tried again.
What's running through your head at that moment, Debbie?
I think I knew. I knew, because I said to my husband, I'm going down. Sean lives in Halewood, I live in Bootle. It's, you know, I said, I'm going down to Sean's, and even my husband was like, I'll go for you. And I said, no, I think I need to go.
Yeah.
So even getting dressed, I just had to take a deep breath because I thought, this is it. Sorry.
Take your time, Debbie.
I thought, this is it. So I drove down to his flat in Halewood, banging on the door, and there was no answer, but I could hear his phone inside. I was phoning him with my ear to the letterbox.
So you can hear it ringing on the other side, so you know his phone's there.
Yeah, and, you know, he's always had his phone with him. And then I was banging on his flat window, because he lived on the ground floor flat, no answer. And then I phoned the mental health team and said, I think I need some support. I phoned you last night, worried about my brother. And I'm at his flat, there's no answer. And I can hear his phone inside. She said, well, if you're worried, you know, we can't do anything. You have to phone the police. Which is obviously something I didn't want to do because that made it official.
That's what he was, and that's what he was scared of as well. So if there's a tiny bit of hope that he is all right on the other side of this door, the last thing he's saying to you is he's scared of the police coming for him.
Exactly.
So you don't want to send the police barging through his door now.
Well, that's what I had to do in the end. And the police came, and as he was soaring off his front door, in my head, I'm thinking, Sean was, he was hilarious without meaning to be. He was like Mr. Bean. And I thought, they're going to break into his flat and he's going to get up and go, what the hell is going on? But obviously he didn't. And then the police told me he was inside and what had happened. And I think the most frustrating thing was when I phoned the team back to tell them what had happened. They weren't off the phone to me the whole day, constantly phoning me. Are you okay? Is there anything we can do for you? Like, you know, let us know if you need us.
For that.
I don't need your help. Like, I'm fine. You know, I begged for your help yesterday. I think there was just so many things that went wrong around that time that could have been prevented. And I just think if families are phoning mental health services, begging them for help, they're not phoning you because they've got nothing better to do. Because I've got three children, I work full time, you know, I would never phone someone for the sake of it. Please take them seriously because they phone you because they're desperate and they don't know what else to do. Because as a family, there is only so much you can do.
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
So moving forward, Debbie, and this is why you contacted me. You didn't contact me because you wanted to talk about, you know, what, you know, how you feel you've been let down. You wanted to talk about the way forward, making things better for other people. And that's what came through on your messages.
Yeah.
Is that now, even though it's only been a month since you lost your brother, your focus is trying to make a change, not because you complain and not because, you know, you feel you've been hard done by. You're coming because you know there's a better way.
Yeah.
And if it can help somebody else, That's your intent. How are you going about doing that, Debbie?
Massively. When Sean was with us, when his nurse used to come round, I used to say, oh, come on, there must be something he can do with the daytime. Because he was wandering around town aimlessly until, you know, my children finished school, I finished work, and then he'd come to our house. He was so lost. And they were offering him, like, gym memberships, saying, oh, you know, you can sign up for this amount or that amount. And Sean was not great with money. He was on benefits, and, you know, he bought what he could when he could, but he would never save money for a gym membership because that was the last thing that was on his mind. So he wouldn't engage in things like that because he knew deep down it wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
So even then, it was in my mind that I've got to set up somewhere where people can go if I die so that they're not lost in their own thoughts. They can go and take part and belong somewhere. But I was studying part-time, a degree, and I was working full-time. I had my children, so I just didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, now this has happened, I've got the time because I work part-time now. Mm. I've finished my degree. And also because this has happened, the amount of support and the people offering support is unreal.
Is that from family and friends and
from organisations? Yeah, anyone, even yourself, people have been in contact. I just feel like it took for this to happen, for people to decide this shouldn't be happening kind of thing.
Is this your way of looking at that this wasn't senseless? This isn't something that has happened for no reason at all.
I think so.
You can sort of move forward, can't you, with a plan in his name?
Yeah, Sean was so important to us. He was a massive part of our life. He was down at our house every day. That it just seems I don't want people to stop talking about him and stop asking me about him. And I feel like if we can help other people in Sean's memory, call his Sean's place, people are saying his name every day. He's still a massive part of our life. And without knowing it, he's going to help so many people if I can pull this off.
So what's Sean's place going to be? Have you found a location?
Yeah, there's a lovely, lovely people called Kelly Phillips and Michael Skelly. They run Connect Studios in Seaforth.
Yeah.
They've just opened a brand new dance school with the support of the women's organisation.
Fantastic. The women's organisation are fantastic. Oh,
literally, like, they're just angels.
Yeah.
So they've offered me the use of their studio every afternoon to get this set up initially. So when I first open it, it's going to be mindfulness classes. It's going to be, you know, a relaxation room, fitness classes. We've had so many people offer to volunteer to, you know, say this is so needed in our community. There's nothing there for men in Liverpool to be able to access it. But the primary thing for me is that it's got to be free of charge because otherwise you're putting up this massive barrier already, which is stopping the people that need it from being able to attend. So that's what I've got in, you know, in the first instance.
Right.
And then the women's organisation met with me last week and they're going to help me to put together a proper business plan so I can approach organisations and get funding so we can have our own premises, call Sean's Place and offer so many more services.
So what can we do right now for people, the amount of people that listen to this podcast? I don't get to see exactly who's listening to it. So I've got no idea who's listening right now. But if you're thinking either you've been affected by mental health issues yourself, or whether this story is just touching your heart right now and you'd like to do something, you need to get in touch. You need to make yourself known. So you can do that by the socials. You can find me. You know how to find me on Facebook and Instagram and stuff. But what about you, Debbie? Have you got a contact that you'd like to give out now for people to contact you directly and say, I want to help, whether it's money, whether they teach something, they want to volunteer, or they've just got an idea for you that they think you could maybe roll out?
I thought, quite hard to get hold of. I am on Twitter. There's a lady as well, I must mention her. Her name's Emma Kenny. She's off this morning. She's a resident psychologist and she is also offering to support the charity because she lost her dad to suicide last month too. Mm. So she's been a massive support and she said that anything she can do to help as well.
Yeah.
So if they find me on Twitter, there's also links to her and she's been a psychologist and a counsellor for years. She does free Facebook Live sessions and helps to manage grief and stuff.
Someone struggling with their own mental health at the moment, there's a brilliant link for you to get involved in.
Yeah,
go and find her on Facebook.
And I just think the biggest thing I can say to anyone who's listening who has family who are suffering with the mental health, if you are getting nowhere by reaching out to these mental health teams, scream as loud as you can at them. Don't take no for an answer, because I think I sort of did at one point and thought, well, you know, it doesn't meet the criteria, that's that. And now I've not got my brother with me. There is things out there. There's a brilliant app called Hub of Hope. And that I've only just found it. Obviously now Sean's passed away. Mm. But that also has a lot of things in the community that your family might be able to access, whether it's counselling services outside of the NHS. But that's a really useful app that I would have liked to have used at the time. But if anyone does want to get in contact, whether it be to be a part of Sean's Place, to refer the brother, the father, the friend to us, please do so. Like I am on Facebook. If you message yourself, is that okay? There's just so many services out there that you might not find out about till it's too late, but I am able to, like, obviously signpost you to a couple of them that might help in the short term. But then in the long term, if anyone is willing to help with Sean's Place, whether that be to, you know, if you have a service that you can offer, whether you're a mindfulness trained coach or, you know, you're a fitness coach that would love to offer an hour a week or something,
You've got this brilliant idea, but you cannot do it on your own.
I can't do it on my own.
Especially a couple of weeks after losing your brother. You need everyone to gather around you now. So I'm rallying the troops.
Thank you.
Come on, everyone. Do your bit now. Get involved. Yeah. You can message me and I'll pass everything on. You are incredible, Debbie. And I just think you're a shining beacon of what Lady Liverpool is all about. So you keep doing what you're doing. And I guarantee the help is going to come to you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store. Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.